Statement of Deputy Abdullah Atam. The remaining answer from yesterday. Number 14. You will not be able to show that protection was offered on the condition of faith in the wars of Moses. And you cannot say that the epidemics, just as was the deluge of Noah alayhi salam, or other cases of mass deaths, were not by the command of God, or that the innocent killed therein became thereby accounted as not innocent. So you either reject the Torah being the word of Allah or stop your criticisms. Our criticisms against the Quran are by virtue of it being opposed to divine attributes. And from this we conclude that it cannot be the word of Allah and that the Prophet of Islam cannot be a messenger of Allah. And we have never gone against our objections to accept that it is the revealed word or that he is a true prophet. Thus, our objections are not like the objections you raise against the Torah despite believing it to be the word of Allah in accord with the Quran and believing that Moses was a true prophet of Allah, yet you raise objections. As I have already shown some of the Quranic teachings which are against divine attributes, I shall state some more such Quranic teachings also. For example, one is that the Quran, instead of teaching worship of the truth, teaches worshipping the fear of falsehood, as it is written in Surah An-Nahl that whoso disbelieves in Allah after he has believed, providing that he is not forced thereto, while his heart is at peace, on such a one is Allah's wrath. In other words, in a state of compulsion, though the heart is at peace in the truth of Allah, to declare disbelief in him will not lead to divine wrath. And this is clearly worship of the fear of falsehood instead of worshipping the truth, that is the right of the omnipotent God. And then in Surah Al-Kahf, it is written that when Zulkarnain arrived in Arabia, he found the sun setting in a stream of murky water. Now, although it states here that it was Zulkarnain who found this to be so, this is not without the attestation of the words of the Quran. That is to say, the testimony of the Quran supports this finding. But this is not actually correct. Thus, how can it be associated with the truth? Number 3. These are the limits to the timings of keeping fasts mentioned in the Quran, that it should be started before the manifesting of the white thread of the day and observed till the coming of the dark thread of the evening. The question here is that if the Quran is for all humanity, then what will happen to Greenland and Iceland, where the sun does not rise for 6 months? And if you say that there an estimate of timings should be made, then the answer to this is that the Quran itself estimates the time and does not permit anybody else to estimate it. These are just some of the Quranic teachings by way of example which go manifestly against the truth. Number 4. Apart from this, it is obvious that a junior can cite a senior in an oath, and the meaning of the oath is that if his statement is false, then the elder can reprimand him. But in the Quran, there are oaths taken of high ceilings, boiling water, olive, and pen, etc. What damage can these things do to God? If these types of oaths are not a joke, what are they? Today's answer. Number 1. You state that the Quran does not teach faith by compulsion. Nothing more need be said regarding this. The fair-minded people will be able to see the statements of both and come to a just evaluation themselves. To execute a commandment of divine wrath is different from explaining a suggested policy. Moses was divinely commanded to completely destroy those 7 nations, just like when a storm is ordained or an epidemic ordered, in which the sinful are destroyed and the trial of the innocent comes to an end. They are not deemed sinners. However, your commandments are a matter of policy in which it is written that women and children should be kept safe and whoever joins Islam will be protected. And this is precisely protection afforded based on faith, on which these allegations are raised. And no allegation can be raised on the pestilences ordained by God, no matter by what means they are wrought. The meaning of ma'mana is not that only the land or house of that very person should be considered to be the abode of peace. In fact, in Surah Al-Anfal, there is a verse, the exact reference of which I shall right now provide after finding it, which states that whoever does not leave his home to come and stay in our midst is not safe from our war. From this, it is proven that by ma'mana is meant that very place where strangers cannot give them any trouble and where they cannot be afforded an opportunity to deviate from the faith. I have accepted your many different types of jihad. My allegation is regarding the jihad of faith by compulsion. Whatever else you have stated is totally irrelevant. You have not given a proper answer to the verses that I have presented by way of argument. And regarding what you said that Moses kept from among the women who remained after the looting, those good and nice for him, what becomes clear from the Torah is that he entered into marriage once with the daughter of Reuel or Jethro. Apart from this, he married no one else, nor did he keep a slave girl. However, he did permit to be left free some of the women who were brought by way of loot by the children of Israel, since there were no guardians left for them, because the order was to kill everyone. And this usually happens in every epidemic, that some people indeed survive by the will of God. But how can you hide the women of plunder and purchased women that the Quran deems lawful, who in fact had guardians and carers present? Look at Surah Al-Ahzab, in which this is written, Ya ayyuha an-nabiyyu inna ahlalna laka azwajaka allati ataita ujurahunna wa ma malakat yaminuk. Translation: O Prophet, we have made lawful to thee thy wives, whom thou hast paid their dowries, and those whom thy right hands possess. Surah Al-Ahzab, chapter 33, verse 51. In this verse, ownership is by buying, and fa' refers to plunder. And that which Sir Sayyid Ahmed Khan has said in explanation of this verse is not the occasion to comment on, but later I shall show the error he makes. We have shown the difference in the battles of Moses, that they were by the command of God and with his signs, whilst the battles of the Quran were clearly a matter of policy, in support of which never was any miracle shown, and the reverence accorded to them goes against the attributes of God, so we cannot consider them to be divinely ordained. Number 2, it is true that the children of Israel borrowed the gold and silver of the Egyptians, but that gold and silver belonged to the true master, who is God, and that same God permitted them to keep it with themselves. So where is the excess in this? The Quran has decreed the jizya, tax, and a life of humiliation for the people of the book. Although they were exempt from open massacre, you cannot say that paying the jizya and being disgraced is nothing small and completely harmless. There is necessarily some harm in this. I will not give you any additional historical references as to what kind of things happened. We have only chosen the Quran, and only on this will we raise our objections and do no more. Number 3. You assert goodness to be a part of mercy, but forgive me, this is such a common mistake which even the average thinker can understand. Goodness is that which shows more benevolence than what is rightfully merited, whereas mercy is that which liberates from the accountability of justice. But you have pointlessly tried to make sure that the teachings of atonement are not proven. That is why you do not wish to understand this. This is a strange thing that you state that mercy has precedence over justice. And what is strange in this is that mercy is shown upon being held accountable. In other words, the accountability demanded by justice, so how can it have precedence? The right thing to say is that every attribute manifests itself on its own proper occasion. And those things that you believe to be related to mercy are in actuality related to goodness. They have nothing to do with mercy. I shall define goodness a little more by way of explanation. For example, if a person bathes his animals properly, feeds them, gives them drink, much more so than would ever be available to them if they were to be set free, then this is goodness. And if a person causes harm to those animals that are under his protection, and he is pleased by injuring them, then this is that matter which is opposite to goodness. Every creature that comes into existence from nothingness has some rights on its creator, one of them being that they will be protected from any being who wishes to cause them pain for whatever reason. This is the limit of justice, but whoever excels from this and increases their contentment, then this is goodness. And when a person is justly called to account for his deliberate and intentional actions and is then helped to be free from this, then this is called mercy. Number 4. Regarding animals, what has been said concerning their being killed for purposes to do with the supply of food and our economic existence? if they suffer some pain, then, sir, you should prove whether it is something apart from the three types of suffering which we have mentioned before, and show if there is some recompense due that needs to be adjudged. Otherwise, what blame is there? And those who are not even aware of the nature of cruelty, or as you also say, how can there even be any recompense done? It appears, sir, that you have not dived into the depths of this philosophy and seen all four sides of it, nor examined its inside and outside. Once you attain a full understanding of its nature, then you will not even present these kinds of arguments. Number 5. I had asked a question regarding angels and the birth of Jesus Christ. I have much to say about this. You have not yet given a reply to this. We will wait for it. Signature English, Ghulam Qadir Fasih, President, representing Muslims. Signature English, Henry Martin Clark, President, representing Christians.